leadership experience. I like to have fun at work. Since you spend so many hours of your life at work, you should be enjoying it. Be serious and work hard, but you can find ways to celebrate accomplishments and sneak in a little lightheartedness when things are really intense. If your team is enjoying the work they are doing and feel recognized for their hard work, they are more likely to go the extra mile when you need it most. What you preach and what you celebrate must be one and the same. If they aren't, the event will come off as insincere and phony, and your credibility will suffer. Any celebration must be an honest expression of commitment to fundamental values and the hard work and dedication of the people who have lived the values. Elaborate productions that lack sincerity are more entertainment than encouragement. Authenticity makes conscious celebrations and fun work. Be personally involved. We started our discussion of exemplary leadership with Model the Way, and we've come full circle. If you want others to believe in something and behave according to those beliefs, you have to set the example by being personally involved. You have to practice what you preach. If you want to build and maintain a culture of excellence and distinction, then you must be personally involved in celebrating the actions that contribute to and sustain the culture. Mushfig Rahman, contract manager in Australia for ALS Industrial, noticed an immediate difference in performance when I spent some time with everyone individually and thanked them personally for their contribution. People felt appreciated that I was spending a lot of time with them and trying genuinely to understand their concerns. When it comes to sending a message throughout the organization, nothing communicates more clearly than what leaders do. Directly and visibly showing others that you're there to cheer them along, you're sending a positive signal. When you set the example, like Mushfik, that says, "Around here we say thanks, show appreciation, and have fun," others will follow your lead. The organization will develop a culture of celebration and recognition. Everyone becomes a leader, everyone sets the example, and everyone takes the time to celebrate the values and victories. When this happens, organizations develop a reputation for being great places to work. In case there's any doubt that being personally involved in celebrations has an impact on others or their assessment of your leadership, look at what we consistently find in our research. Direct reports who indicate their leaders almost always get personally involved in recognizing people and celebrating accomplishments consistently score themselves over 20% higher than their colleagues on various engagement variables like motivation, pride, and productivity. This gap grows dramatically to between 40 and 50% when comparing the former to those leaders seen as occasionally or less being personally involved. Why people report feeling valued by their leaders and how they rate the trustworthiness and effectiveness of their leaders traces directly to the extent that their leader gets personally involved in recognizing people and celebrating accomplishments. Wherever you find a strong culture built around strong values, you'll also find endless examples of leaders who live its values. Beth Taut, while a financial analyst at Citibank, observed how her manager, Joe, was personally involved in demonstrating appreciation. Joe would do small things, such as taking the team out for a surprise lunch or letting team members leave early if she knew they had something special happening in the evening. She let team members with children come in late or leave early on special occasions like birthdays. She scattered small and silly gifts with hidden jokes or meaning on everyone's desks. Being personally involved at this level resulted in Joe's team, according to Beth, being completely dedicated to her. She was an inspiration, and that meant they would work until all hours to ensure the project was completed. Because of her hands-on personal involvement, Joe's team wanted to show that they warranted her confidence and trust in their abilities and dedication. According to Beth, Joe had such close relationships with a varied group of individuals that she knew how to get each person to perform beyond their comfort zone and to remain dedicated to the cause. She made coming to work and being there late seem fun and not like a hard slog. The lesson from this experience for every aspiring exemplary leader in Beth's view is that you have to be involved and connected with what's going on, and that the best recognition is ongoing without being expected or predictable. She went on to say, to have done great work and be recognized by Joe was more valued than any other recognition team members wanted. Personal dedication and involvement earn leaders the respect and trust of their teams. It's what builds credibility and loyalty and creates an engaged and productive workforce. Show you care. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care for them. In other words, they believe that you want to ensure that they are safe and secure, feel supported and valued, that you want them to be successful, learning and growing, and you wouldn't ask them to do something where they could intentionally be injured or hurt. Demonstrating this isn't rocket science. For example, Jane Binger, responsible for leadership development and education for years at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, Stanford University, found that most of the medical and administrative staff just desired simple gestures showing that she and others cared about how they were doing. This usually took the form of a personal note or email, a comment during a meeting or in the corridor, or just a quick stop by their office. They want to know that I value them, that I think they are doing a great job, that I am not taking them or their contributions for granted. This doesn't require any grand over-the-top actions, said Jane. Empirically, we found a strong and positive relationship between the extent to which a leader praised people for a job well done, and their direct reports favorable responses to the statement, the people who are part of this person's work group feel that the organization values their work. Showing someone that you care about them makes them feel that you have their best interests at heart. How direct reports respond to a question about the extent their leader has the best interests of other people at work relates directly to their level of team spirit and pride. It's also directly related to how favorably they evaluate the leader's effectiveness and the likelihood that they would recommend that individual to a friend as a good leader. When the executive team at Australia's Macquarie Bank made the decision to close their mortgage operation in the United States, Peter Marr, then group head of banking and financial services, could have delivered the news via email or even through a lower-level manager. Peter realized that the best thing he could do to show he cared was to be completely honest and upfront throughout the process and to treat his staff with respect and intelligence. He flew to Florida and sat down with about 100 employees to deliver the news personally. Peter says of the experience, it was how you did it, not what you did. I deliberately sat on a chair in front of the people and just talked about what was going on. He admitted that it was a really painful conversation, but he believed that the best thing he could do was to be real with them. I just told them everything that was going on. It was interesting that a number of them afterward, while disappointed, told me how they appreciated the honesty in the way the decision was communicated. People who perceive their colleagues as caring, research shows, are most likely to be sought out for advice and be seen as a leader, and this in turn results in higher performance levels. On the other hand, people indicate that when they feel they're being treated uncaringly at work, for example, rudely by a colleague, they respond by deliberately decreasing their effort or lowering the quality of their work. Showing up to deliver bad news in person, as Peter did, is an important way to demonstrate you care. So is just being visible in day-to-day undertakings. It not only demonstrates you care, but also makes you more real, more genuine, more approachable, and more human. Attending important meetings, visiting customers, touring the plants or service centers, dropping in on labs, making presentations at association gatherings, being at organizational events, even when you're not on the program, recruiting at local universities, holding roundtable discussions, speaking with analysts, or just stopping by your constituents' cubicles to say hello, all are instances that show people that you are interested in them, the work they do, and the contributions they make. Being where they are helps you stay in touch, literally and figuratively, with what's going on. It shows that you walk the talk about the values you and your constituents share. Spread the stories. Personally getting involved and showing that they care gives leaders the opportunity to both find and convey stories that put a human face on values. First-person examples are always more powerful and striking than third-party examples. It's that critical difference between I saw it for myself and someone told me about it. You need to be constantly on the lookout for whatever is being done well so that you can both let that person know to keep up the good work and be able to tell others about it. That way, you can give up-close and personal accounts of what it means to put into practice shared values and aspirations. In the process, you create organizational role models to whom everyone can relate. You put the behavior in a real context. Values become more than simply rules, they come alive. Through the stories that you tell, you dramatically and memorably illustrate how people should act and make decisions. After studying professionals in life and death situations, cognitive psychologist Gary Klein concludes that stories are the most powerful method for both eliciting and disseminating knowledge. The reason for this is that stories, by their nature, are public forms of communication. Storytelling is how people pass along lessons from generation to generation, culture to culture. Emory psychology professor Drew Weston argues that the stories our leaders tell us matter, probably almost as much as the stories our parents tell us as children, because they orient us to what is, what could be, and what should be, to the worldviews they hold, and to the values they hold sacred. Moreover, stories are tailor-made for celebrations. In fact, you can think of stories as celebrations. Celebrations of adventure and accomplishment, of courage and perseverance, of being true to deeply held values and beliefs. Leaders find numerous ways to perpetuate the important stories. For instance, by publishing an example in the company newsletter or annual report, relating a story in a public ceremony, or making a video and broadcasting it on the internal television network or streaming it on social media. Leaders shine the spotlight on someone who's lived out an organizational value and provide others in the organization with an example they can emulate. Leaders who tell stories of encouragement about the good work of others have direct reports who feel personally valued and believe that their leaders bring out the best of people's talents and abilities. The extent to which people would give a strong recommendation about their leader to a colleague relates directly to how frequently their leaders tell stories of encouragement about the good work of others. Leaders rated in the top 20% on this leadership behavior are 4 to 5 times more favorably recommended than their counterparts in the bottom 20% on this leadership behavior. Dustin Schaefer, regional account manager with Flexera Software, told us how he was surprised during an all-hands call when his vice president of worldwide sales recognized him and told a story about the way Dustin displaced a top competitor. The VP gave a very descriptive overview of how Dustin worked with the executive team to create enough uncertainty with their recent decision and the current implementation that they scratched the competitor's solution midstream. The VP went on to characterize the lessons from this experience, the moral of the story, and how the team could use the lessons from that success to create more wins in the marketplace. He connected my win, says Dustin, in a way that showed it was a collective win for the company. He got others to gather behind my story in what was an otherwise competitive sales group and realize we can all celebrate together, learning and growing from each other's successes. He also connected my results to the values and accomplishments of our company. Dustin's story resonated with his colleagues, and after the call, several of them who had not engaged much with Dustin in the past reached out to him and asked for more information on his experience. Says Dustin, "I found we were sharing and exchanging more information than we had in the past. This helped to strengthen our sense of rapport and community toward a common goal." By telling stories, you accomplish more effectively the objectives of teaching, mobilizing, and motivating than you can through bullet points in a PowerPoint presentation or tweets on a mobile device. Listening to and understanding the stories leaders tell does more to inform people about the values and culture of an organization than do the company policies or the employee manual. Well-told stories are much more effective in reaching people's emotions and pulling them along. They make the message stick. They simulate the experience of actually being there and give people a compelling way of learning what is most important about the experience. Reinforcing stories through celebrations deepens the connections. Make celebrations part of organizational life. You need to put celebrations on the calendar. These scheduled events serve as opportunities to get people together so that you can show people how they are part of the larger vision and a shared destiny. They are highly visible ways for you to affirm shared values, mark meaningful progress, and create a sense of community. You probably already calendar birthdays, holidays, and anniversaries. You also should do it for the significant milestones in the life of your team and organization. Giving them a date, time, and place announces to everyone that these things matter. It also creates a sense of anticipation. Scheduling celebrations doesn't rule out spontaneous events. It just means that certain occasions are of such significance that everyone needs to pay particular attention to them. In setting up celebrations, you first need to decide which organizational values, events of historical significance, or singular successes are of such importance that they warrant a special ritual, ceremony, or festivity. Perhaps you want to honor the group or team of people who created the year's breakthrough innovations, praise those who gave extraordinary customer service, or thank the families of your constituents for their support. Whatever you wish to celebrate, you need to formalize it, announce it, and tell people how they become eligible to participate. At a minimum, you ought to have at least one celebration each year that involves everyone, though not necessarily at the same site, and draws attention to each of the core values of your organization. Leaders make celebrations as much a part of their organization's life as they can. Think about what might work for your organization. Here are some examples that University of Southern California Professor Terrence Deal and clinical community psychologist M.K. Key provide in their book, Corporate Celebration. Cyclical celebrations, for example, seasonal themes, key milestones, and corporate anniversaries. Recognition ceremonies, for example, public applause and acknowledgement for a job well done. Celebrations of triumph, special occasions for accentuating collective accomplishments, for example, launching a new product or strategy, and opening a new office, plant, or store. Rituals for comfort and letting go, for example, loss of a contract, layoffs of employees, and death of a colleague. Personal transitions, for example, entrances and exits. Workplace altruism, for example, doing good for others and promoting social change. Play, for example, games and sporting events, spoofing and poking fun. At Zeno Group, there are many such celebrations during the year, such as the Friday after work sing-alongs and other informal get-togethers and recognitions. They have an annual New Year's Eve party every June 30th, the end of Zeno's fiscal year. On that day, all the offices connect by teleconference. They pop champagne and raise a virtual toast. CEO Barbie Siegel communicates with everyone via teleconference, reflecting on what they've accomplished, and talks about what's ahead in the future. Then all of the offices continue with their own celebrations. Of course, celebrations don't have to be about a single achievement or for one person. Justin Brocato, senior manager for marketing operations at Cisco Systems, told us about the impact an annual awards banquet had at one of his former companies. It was a wonderful way to celebrate our accomplishments and spread that sense of community. Significant others were encouraged to attend, so it was a nice way to get to know people outside of an office setting and further build upon existing relationships. It was also the perfect forum to publicly recognize all of the contributions of the team and reflect on what we had accomplished. In reflecting further on this experience, Justin wondered, what if management had just sent out an email to announce and congratulate the winners? He concluded people would have appreciated it, but it would have paled in comparison to the roar of applause and whistles when someone goes on stage to accept their award and hears their manager tell that person and an audience full of his or her peers why these accomplishments were worthy of recognition. Celebrating in public is so much more memorable, Justin felt, and the impact that it has on the recipient and the team is longer-lasting. People get energized, and suddenly they have a renewed sense of commitment for the year to come. Whether there to honor an individual, group, or organizational achievement, or to encourage team learning and relationship building, celebrations, ceremonies, and similar events offer leaders the perfect opportunity to explicitly communicate and reinforce the actions and behaviors that are important in realizing shared values and mutual goals. Exemplary leaders know that promoting a culture of celebration fuels the sense of unity essential for retaining and motivating today's workforce. Celebrations, the data shows, significantly affect how people feel about their organization and their leader. The more people report their leader finds ways to celebrate accomplishments, the more effective they feel in meeting their objectives, and the more highly they rate the overall effectiveness of their leader. There is no shortage of opportunities to bring people together to celebrate your organization's values and victories. In good times or bad, gathering together to acknowledge those who've contributed and the actions that have led to success signals to everyone that their efforts made a difference. Their energy, enthusiasm, and well-being, and yours, will be all the better for it. Take action. Celebrate the values and victories. Celebrating together reinforces the fact that extraordinary performance is the result of many people's efforts. Visibly and publicly celebrating accomplishments creates community and sustains team spirit. By basing celebrations on acting congruently with fundamental values and attaining critical milestones, leaders reinforce and sustain people's focus. Social interaction increases individuals' commitments to the standards of the group and has a profound effect on their well-being. When people are asked to go beyond their comfort zones, the support and encouragement of their colleagues boosts their resistance to the possible debilitating effects of stress. Make sure that people do not regard your organization as the place where fun goes to die. Leaders set the example by being personally involved in celebration and recognition, demonstrating that encouraging the heart is something everyone should do. Telling stories about individuals who have made exceptional efforts and achieved phenomenal successes provides opportunities for leaders to showcase role models for others to emulate. Stories make people's experiences memorable, often even profound, in ways they hadn't envisioned, and serve as a marker for future behaviors. Making personal connections with people in a culture of celebration also builds and sustains credibility. It reduces we-they demarcations between leaders and constituents. Adding vitality and a sincere sense of appreciation to the workplace is essential. To encourage the heart, you must celebrate the values and victories by creating a spirit of community. This means you must, 1, find and also create occasions to bring people together to publicly celebrate accomplishments. 2, take actions that demonstrate that you have people's backs and ensure they feel part of the whole. 3, make fun a portion of your work environment. Laugh and enjoy yourself along with others. 4. Get personally involved in as many recognitions and celebrations as possible. Show you care by being visible in the tough times. 5. Never pass up an opportunity to relate publicly true stories about how people in your organization went above and beyond the call of duty. 6. Calendar celebrations and look as well for spontaneous opportunities to link shared values with victories. Chapter 13. Leadership is everyone's business. Throughout this book, we've told stories of ordinary people who've made extraordinary things happen. They are from all over the globe, from all age groups and walks of life. They represent a wide variety of organizations, public and private, government and non-governmental, high tech and low tech, small and large, educational and professional services. Chances are you haven't heard of them. They're not public figures, celebrities, or megastars. They're people who might live next door or work in the next cubicle over. They are people just like you. We've focused on everyday leaders because leadership is not about position or title. It's not about organizational power or authority. It's not about celebrity or wealth. It's not about the family you are born into. It's not about being at the organization's apex as CEO, president, general, or prime minister. And it's definitely not about being some sort of hero. Leadership is about relationships, about credibility, about passion and conviction, and ultimately, about what you do. You don't have to look up for leadership. You don't have to look out for leadership. You only have to look inward. You have the potential to lead others to places they have never been. But before you can lead others, you have to believe that you can have a positive impact on others. You have to believe that your values are worthy and that what you do matters. You have to believe that your words can inspire and your actions can move others. Moreover, you have to be able to convince others that the same is true for them. In these turbulent times, the world needs more people who believe they can make a difference and who are willing to act on that belief. As Natraj Iyer, product manager at eBay, told us, "We often think of leadership as something big and grand, but based on my experiences, I think real leadership is everywhere and in the daily moments. We all have several opportunities in our daily lives to seize the moment and be the leaders we can be. Each and every one of us has a choice to be that leader. At this very moment, leadership is in you and in where you are. The question is, what are you going to do to put it into practice?" Exemplary leadership is local. For a long time, we've been asking people of all ages and backgrounds about the people in their own lives who are role models for leadership. Not well-known historical leaders, but leaders with whom they've had personal experience. We ask them to identify the person they'd select as their most important leadership role model and select from a list of 8 possible categories from which these leaders might come. Is their role model a business leader, community or religious leader, entertainer or movie star, family member, political leader, professional athlete, teacher or coach, or other, none, not sure? Think about whom you would choose. Regardless of age, when thinking back over their lives and selecting their most important leadership role models, people are more likely to choose a family member than anyone else. In second place, for respondents 30 years of age and under, is a teacher or coach. For the over 30 crowd, business leader is number 2, and upon probing further, people tell us that business leader really means an individual who is an immediate supervisor who essentially served as a teacher and coach in the workplace. Most likely, you notice that top groups are the people you know well and who know you well. They're the leaders you are closest to and who are closest to you. They're the ones with whom you have the most frequent contact. Leadership role models are local. This finding has extremely important implications. As a parent, teacher, or coach, you are the person who's setting the leadership example for young people. It's not hip-hop artists, movie stars, professional athletes, or others making news on social media who inspire them about leadership. You are the one they are most likely going to look to for the example of how a leader responds to competitive situations, handles crises, deals with loss, or resolves ethical dilemmas. It's not someone else. It's you. The data also reveals that if you're a manager in an organization, to your direct reports, you are the most important leader in your organization. You are their teacher and coach, and more likely than any other person in the organization to influence their desire to stay or leave, the trajectory of their careers. Their ethical behavior, their ability to perform at their best, their drive to wow customers, and their motivation to share the organization's vision and values. There's no escape. You are now on notice that regardless of title or position, be it at home, in school, the community, or workplace, you must take responsibility for the quality of leadership the people around you observe and receive. You are accountable for the leadership you demonstrate. You set an example, whether you like it or not, whether intentional or not. The conscious decision you must make is how good a leader and role model you want to be. People are watching you regardless of whether you know it or not. You are having an impact on them, regardless of whether you intend to or not. Everyone, and that literally means every person, is potentially a role model for someone, and this means that leadership must be everyone's business. The most lasting test of your leadership effectiveness is the extent to which you bring forth and develop the leadership abilities in others, not just in yourself. You have the capacity to liberate the leader within everyone. Exemplary leadership matters. Debbie Coleman is one of the first leaders we ever interviewed about personal best leadership practices and the first leader we quoted in the original edition of the Leadership Challenge. At that time, Debbie was vice president of worldwide manufacturing for Apple. When we caught up with her recently as managing partner of SmartForest, a venture capital firm, she told us that her perspective on leadership hasn't changed over the years from what she originally said. I think good people deserve good leadership. The people I manage deserve the best leadership in the world. Debbie expresses the sentiments of all exemplary leaders. They strive mightily to deliver the best leadership in the world because they firmly believe that people deserve it. Most likely, that's exactly what you want from your leaders and what your constituents want from you. Nothing less than the best. No doubt you're listening to this book for the same reason. Debbie's commitment to exemplary leadership matters. Yours does too. It matters because great leadership creates great workplaces. Not so great leadership creates not so great workplaces. You know this from your own experience. We know this because we've continued to find evidence that leadership has a significant impact on people's engagement levels and their performance. You've heard about data for this in every chapter. Let's look at one more study that underscores this point. We've asked thousands of people to think about the worst leader and the best leader they've ever worked with. We then posed this question. What percentage, from 1 to 100, of your talents, skills, and ability, plus time and energy, would you say each of these leaders used? When people think about their experience with their worst leaders, the percentage of talent utilized typically ranges between 2% and 40%, with an average of 31%. In other words, people report that they expended less than a third of their available talents in their experiences with their worst leaders. Many continued to work hard, but few put all that they were capable of delivering into their work. Exit interviews reveal a similar phenomenon. People aren't quitting their companies as much as they are quitting the relationship with their manager. Surveys show that 1 in 2 people at some point in their careers have left their job to get away from their managers. This dismal situation is in sharp contrast to what people report when they think about their experience with their best leaders. These leaders bring out a minimum of 40% of their talent, and note that this bottom was the top of the range for the worst leaders. In fact, many claim that their best leaders actually got more than 100% of their talent. You know that it's mathematically impossible to get more than 100% of an individual's talent. And yet people shake their heads and say, no, that leader really did get me to do more than I thought I was capable of doing, or that it was even possible to do. The average percentage of talent utilized by people's best leaders is a whopping 95%. The performance difference between people's worst and best leaders is huge. The best leaders bring out more than 3 times the amount of talent, energy, and motivation from their people compared with their counterparts at the other end of the spectrum. This data, and other evidence presented throughout this book, confirms that leadership makes a difference. That difference can be negative or it can be positive, but it does matter. Leadership has an impact on people's commitment, their willingness to put forth discretionary effort, to take personal initiative and responsibility, and to perform beyond the ordinary. Bad leaders have a dampening effect on these behaviors, and exemplary leaders have just the opposite effect. What sort of difference do you want to achieve through your leadership? The choice is yours. We're confident that you want to become the best leader you can be, and not just for your own sake, but also for the sake of others and for the success of the endeavors you are pursuing. After all, it's unlikely you'd be listening to this book if you didn't have this aspiration. How can you learn to lead better than you do now? Learning leadership takes practice. Nearly every time we give a speech or conduct a workshop, someone asks, "Are leaders born or made?" Whenever we're asked this question, our answer, always offered with a smile, is this: "We've never met a leader who wasn't born. We've also never met an accountant, artist, athlete, engineer, lawyer, physician, writer, or zoologist who wasn't born. We're all born. That's a given." You might be thinking, "Well, that's not fair. That's a trick answer. Everyone is born." That's precisely our point. Every one of us is born, and every one of us has the necessary material to become a leader, including you. The question you should be asking yourself is not, "Am I born to be a leader?" In becoming a better leader, the more demanding and significant question you should be asking is, "Can I become a better leader tomorrow than I am today?" To that question, our answer is a resounding yes. Let's get something straight. Leadership is not some mystical quality that only a few people have and everyone else doesn't. Leadership is not preordained. It's not a gene, and it's not a trait. There is no hard evidence to support the assertion that leadership is imprinted in the DNA of only some individuals, and that everyone else missed out and are doomed to be clueless. We've collected assessment data from millions of people around the world. We can tell you without a doubt that there are leaders in every profession, every type of organization, every religion, and every country, from young to old, male and female. It's a myth that leadership can't be learned, that you either have it or you don't. There is leadership potential everywhere we look. As Ian McCamey, senior content producer for the Ozo product suite at Nokia Technologies, commented, "By examining the behaviors that all leaders engage in, the concept of leadership becomes an attainable skill rather than a mysterious power." Leadership is an observable pattern of practices and behaviors, and a definable set of skills and abilities. And any skill can be learned, strengthened, honed, and enhanced, given the motivation and desire, along with practice, feedback, role models, and coaching. When we track the progress of people who participate in leadership development programs, for example, the research demonstrates that they improve over time. They learn to be better leaders. Here's the rub. Leadership can be learned. However, not everyone wants to learn it, and not all those who learn about leadership master it. Why? Because becoming the very best requires a strong belief that you can learn and grow, an intense aspiration to excel, the determination to challenge yourself constantly, the recognition that you must engage the support of others, and the devotion to practice deliberately. Moreover, the best leaders realize that no matter how good they might be, they always can be even better and are open to learning how to do so. This is music to Don Schalk. Don has served as the chief executive officer of several companies in his career and is now on the faculty at Alvernia University, Reading, Pennsylvania. He shared with us a personal experience that exemplifies the point that the best performers always strive to improve. Don was a highly skilled baseball player, and he related how his collegiate coach and mentor, Dick Rockwell, regularly told him and his fellow players, "Practice begins at 3 p.m. and ends at 5 p.m. If that's all you do, we won't win and you won't play." The message was very clear. Getting to play on the team required more than just showing up for 2 hours of practice each day. Winning ball games meant that everyone on the team had to do more, not just one player. That's the attitude of champions, and it applies to leadership as much as it does athletics. If you want to become exemplary, you have to train hard and put in extra effort to practice and hone your skills. As the old saying goes, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. Florida State University professor and noted authority on expertise, K. Anders Ericsson, made this same point when he said, "Until most individuals recognize that sustained training and effort is a prerequisite for reaching expert levels of performance, they will continue to misattribute lesser achievement to the lack of natural gifts and will thus fail to reach their own potential." Anders and his colleagues have found over the decades of their research that raw talent is not all there is to becoming a top performer. It doesn't matter whether it's in sports, music, medicine, computer programming, mathematics, or other fields. Talent is not the key that unlocks excellence. Staggeringly high IQs don't characterize the great performers either. Sometimes world-class performers are really brilliant, but in many cases they possess just average intelligence. Similarly, years of experience don't necessarily make someone a high performer, let alone the greatest performer. And, as startling as it might sound, sometimes more years of experience can mean poorer performance compared to those newly graduated in a specialty, because people can get trapped into old paradigms that are no longer relevant. You must have a passion for learning in order to become the best leader you can be. What truly differentiates the expert performers from the good performers is devotion to deliberate practice. Practicing deliberately doesn't mean you engage in just any activity. Instead, you engage in experiences designed specifically to improve performance. Designed is the key idea, meaning there is a methodology, and there is a very specific goal. Second, practice is not a one-time event. Engaging in a designed learning experience just once or twice doesn't cut it. It has to be done over and over and over again until it's automatic, and that takes hours of repetition. Another important characteristic of deliberate practice is the availability of feedback. Without knowing how you are doing, it's difficult to gauge whether you're getting close to your goal and whether you're executing correctly. While there may come a time when you're accomplished enough to assess your performance, you need a coach, mentor, or some other third party to help analyze how you did. Furthermore, and let's be realistic, deliberate practice isn't much fun. What keeps the top performers going during the often grueling practice sessions is not the enjoyment that they are having in that activity, but the knowledge that they are improving and getting closer to their dream of superior performance when it counts. Finally, there's just no getting around the fact that practice takes time. You may be familiar with the popularized notion that it takes 10,000 hours of practice if you want to become an expert, but the truth is there is no specific number. You have to put the time in, but don't make a big deal about the number of hours required. For some, it will take more than 10,000 hours to master the art of leadership. For others, it will be less. What is true of all champions, however, is that mastery is a lifelong pursuit. The most meaningful and important way that you can take charge of becoming an exemplary leader is to make learning leadership a daily habit. Learning leadership is not something that you add on to your already busy schedule when you get around to it. It's not something that you do on a weekend or once a month at a retreat. It's not something that gets cut from the calendar when times are tough. It's something you do as automatically and instinctively as your other important priorities in the day. It's something that happens as routinely as checking your email, texting a colleague, or conducting a meeting. It's something you consider essential to your personal success. Just like physical exercise, you must do it daily to get fit and stay in shape. The aha moment for Tommy Baldacci, sales associate with Rumbix, was when he realized the importance of daily practice. I had to learn how to be a leader before I could be one. I had to make a decision that I was going to be a leader. Once I decided what I wanted and made it a part of every thought of my waking day, it began to consume me. Every action that I took was a contributor to the goal of being a leader. This is the same with every path to being successful. You have to make a decision that practicing leadership will take conscious effort. Contrasts and contradictions. In our research, we learned that in performing at their personal bests, leaders model the way, inspire a shared vision, challenge the process, enable others to act, and encourage the heart. And we found that leaders who most frequently engage in the five practices are significantly more likely to achieve extraordinary results than leaders who don't make much use of these practices. But there's a catch. You can learn to do all of this perfectly and still get fired. Maybe we should have told you this sooner, but no doubt you knew it already. There's absolutely no way that we can say that any of these leadership practices will always work all the time with all people. We know for certain that there's a much greater probability that they will, and there's no ironclad money-back guarantee. And if anyone ever stands in front of you and claims that they have the 3, 5, 7, or 9-factor theory that's 100% certain to get you results and rewards, then grab onto your wallet and run. There's no get-rich-quick, instant weight-loss program for leadership. There's still another catch. Any leadership practice can become destructive. Virtues can become vices. There's a point at which each of the five practices, taken to extremes, can lead you astray. We know that finding your voice and setting an example are essential to credibility and accomplishment. But an obsession with being seen as a role model can lead to being too focused on your own values and your way of doing things. It can cause you to discount others' views and be closed to feedback. It can push you into isolation for fear of losing privacy or being found out. It can also cause you to be more concerned with style than substance. Being forward-looking and communicating a clear and common vision of the future are what set leaders apart from other credible people. Yet a singular focus on one vision of the future can blind you to other possibilities, as well as to the realities of the present. It can cause you to miss the exciting possibilities that are just out of your sight or make you hang on just a little too long to an old, tired, and out-of-date technology. Exploiting your powers of inspiration can cause others to surrender their will. Your own energy, enthusiasm, and charm may be so magnetic that others stop thinking for themselves and mindlessly agree with your perspective. Challenging the process is essential to promoting innovation and progressive change. Seizing initiative and taking risks are necessary for learning and continuous improvement. However, take this to extremes and you can create needless turmoil, confusion, and paranoia. Routines are important, and if you seldom pause long enough to give people an opportunity to gain confidence and competence, they'll lose their motivation to try new things. Change simply for change's sake can be just as demoralizing as complacency. Collaboration and teamwork are essential to getting extraordinary things done in today's hyperactive world. Innovation depends on high degrees of trust, and people must feel a sense of control in their own lives if they are to accomplish great things. However, an over-reliance on collaboration and trust may reflect an avoidance of addressing critical issues or providing negative feedback. It may be a way of not taking charge when the situation requires. Delegating power and responsibility can become a way of dumping too much on others when they're not fully prepared to handle it and evading your responsibility. We know that people perform at higher levels when they're encouraged. Personal recognition and group celebration create the spirit and momentum that can carry a group forward, even during the toughest of challenges. At the same time, constantly worrying about who should be recognized and when there should be celebrations can turn us into gregarious minstrels. You can lose sight of the mission and any sense of urgency because you're having so much fun. You can become so consumed by all the perks and pleasures that you forget the purpose of it all. Far more insidious than these potential problems, however, is the dangerous lure of hubris. It's fun to be a leader, gratifying to have influence, and exhilarating to have scores of people cheering your every word. In many all-too-subtle ways, it's easy to be seduced by power and importance. All evil leaders have been infected with the disease of hubris, becoming bloated with an exaggerated sense of self and pursuing their own sinister ends. How do you avoid this? Humility is the antidote for hubris. You can avoid excessive pride only when you recognize that you're human and need the help of others. Exemplary leaders know that they can't do it alone, and they act accordingly. They lack the pride and pretense displayed by many leaders who succeed in the short term but leave behind a weak organization that fails to remain viable after their departure. They remain interested in the ideas of others, learning about matters for which they don't already have the answers. They are resilient and demonstrate a willingness to experiment. They appreciate the lessons learned from experience, including the disappointments. With self-effacing humor, deep listening to those around them, and generous and sincere credit to others, humble leaders achieve higher and higher levels of performance. The word human and the word humble both derive from the Latin humus, meaning earth. To be human and humble is to be down to earth, with your feet planted firmly on the ground. Interesting, isn't it, how as you climb the ranks, you often climb to a higher floor in the building, getting farther and farther away from the ground. Is it any wonder that the higher you go, the harder it gets to keep your footing? You must have courage to be human and the courage to be humble. It takes a lot of courage to admit that you aren't always right, that you can't always anticipate every possibility, that you can't envision every future, that you can't solve every problem, that you can't control every variable, that you aren't always congenial, that you make mistakes, and that you are, in a word, human. It takes courage to admit all these things to others, but it may take even more courage to admit them to yourself. If you can find the humility to do that, you invite others into a courageous conversation. When you let down your guard and open yourself up to others, you invite them to join you in the creation of something that you alone could not create. When you become more modest and unpretentious, others have the chance themselves to become visible and noticed. Nothing in the research hints that leaders should be perfect. Leaders aren't saints. They're human beings, full of the flaws and failings like everyone else. They make mistakes. Perhaps the very best advice for all aspiring leaders is to remain humble and unassuming, to always remain open to learning more about yourself and the world around you. First, lead yourself. The instrument of leadership is the self, and mastery of the art of leadership comes from mastery of the self. Engineers have computers, painters, canvas and brushes, musicians, instruments. Leaders have only themselves. Becoming the best leader you can be means becoming the best self you can be. Therefore, leadership development is fundamentally self-development. Self-development is not about stuffing in a whole bunch of new information or trying out the latest technique. It's about leading out of what is already in your soul. It's about liberating the leader within you. And it starts with looking inside. The better you know yourself, the better you can make sense of the often incomprehensible and conflicting messages you receive daily. Do this, do that. Support this, support that. Decide this, decide that. Change this, change that. You need internal guidance to navigate the turmoil in today's highly uncertain environment. Brian Ehlink, whom we introduced in the first chapter of this book, told us that to grow as a leader, it was extremely important to better understand himself. He came to this realization while leading the customer operations function for Capital One's auto finance business. To get to know members of his large and diverse team, Brian created Snack and Chats, in which 8 to 10 associates from various areas gathered in an informal setting to talk about their greatest passions outside of work. Brian heard some fascinating personal stories. The informal gatherings also provided him with a chance to start telling his own story. Reflecting on his early life experiences during which his family had endured financial hardship and moved into a travel trailer gave Brian a pathway to exemplary leadership. My strong drive to succeed was born lying awake at night in the trailer at the KOA campground, promising myself I would still dream big, work hard, and voraciously learn to accomplish great things to take care of my family someday. Little by little, I began to share my personal story with groups of associates I met with, just to put myself out there a little. The response was incredibly supportive. I find that everyone has challenges in their lives that are just really tough. And it's those moments, it's those hard moments that shape who they are and what they stand for. These experiences helped Brian to realize that leadership comes from the heart and from a place of being genuine, being vulnerable, and bringing your whole self to work. Bringing your whole self to work requires the kind of self-exploration in which Brian engaged. It requires looking back over your life to understand the experiences that shaped you and the values those experiences taught you. As you continue your journey toward exemplary leadership, you must wrestle with some difficult questions. What were the peak moments in my life and what motivated me to achieve them? What are the values that should guide my decisions and actions? What do I need to do to improve my abilities to move this team or organization forward? Where do I think the organization should be headed over the next 10 years? What gives me the courage to continue in the face of uncertainty and adversity? How solid are my relationships with my constituents? How trustworthy am I? What can I do to keep hope alive in others and myself? While not an exhaustive list, all exemplary leaders have wrestled with questions like these. Such personal searching is essential in the development of leaders. You can't lead others until you've first led yourself on a journey of self-discovery. Research has found that taking the time each day, even as little as 10 to 15 minutes, to reflect on what you have learned from your experiences significantly improves your subsequent performance. If you are to become the leader you aspire to be, then you must take the time to step back and reflect on your past, your present, your future, and discover your passions. Learning is doing. Learning about yourself and about leadership, however, are not the same as leading. Deciding to be an exemplary leader is not the same as being one. Leading is doing. You need to make leading a daily habit. You need to do something every day to learn more about leading, and you need to put those lessons into practice every day. Sergei Nikiforov, Senior Director of Sales at Persistence Systems, pondered this challenge, explaining to us that the question of where do I start becoming a better leader had been nagging him for some time. Sergei assumed he had to do something grand and ambitious to demonstrate that he was a leader, but then it dawned on him. I found that every day I had an opportunity to make a small difference. I could have coached someone better. I could have listened better. I could have been more positive toward people. I could have said thank you more often. I could have... The list just went on and on. At first, I was a bit overwhelmed with the discovery of how many opportunities I had in a single day to act as a better leader. But as I have gotten to put these ideas into practice, I have been pleasantly surprised by how much improvement I have been able to make by being more conscientious and intentional about acting as a leader. Sergei is right on point. Each day provides countless chances to make a difference. The chance might come in a private conversation with a direct report or in a meeting with colleagues. It might come over the family dinner table. It might come when you're speaking at a conference on the future of your business. Or it might come when you're listening to a friend talk about a current conflict with a peer, or as a result of asking for feedback from a customer, client, or partner. Leadership is in the moment. There are many moments each day when you can choose to lead. Each day, you can choose to make a difference. Each of these moments serves up the prospect of contributing to a lasting legacy. Remember the secret to success in life. There's one final leadership